We're on Perek Tzadi Aleph, chapter 91. And this is the second of 11 kapitulach that were written by Moshe Rabbeinu. The second of 11 kapitulach. Now, we discussed a little bit last week, how is it exactly that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote kapitulach? Because we have in the Chumash everything that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, that Hashem told him to write. So it could be the Medrash says that there's a Medrash that says that in Mitzrayim, the Jews had certain scrolls that had Divrei Chizuk on them, and they used to study these scrolls during the week to give themselves Chizuk and encouragement, and there were 11 scrolls. Now, the Medrash doesn't say exactly what those 11 scrolls were, but there are 11 kapitulach that were written by Moshe Rabbeinu that were put on scrolls and that were handed down until the times of David HaMelech. And it's possible that those are the kapitulach, those scrolls were the kapitulach written by Moshe Rabbeinu, and he wrote it in his own words, as opposed to the Chumash, which of course he wrote what Hashem told him to write. And that these scrolls were handed down until the times of David HaMelech. David HaMelech adapted them, and put them into Tehillim. The tradition is that each kapitul is about one of the Shvatim, about one particular Shevet. Now there's 11 kapitulach and 12 Shvatim. The tribe of Shimon does not have a kapitul. If we recall in the Chumash, Pinchas slew Zimri for Zimri's outrageous behavior, and Zimri was from Shevet Shimon. And because of that, when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote these scrolls, he did not include one for Shimon. We don't know much of the details about the scrolls or about how all of this worked, but we know that these were written by Moshe Rabbeinu and then edited into Tehillim by David HaMelech. Now this particular kapitul is dedicated to the tribe of Levi. Tradition tells us that it was dedicated to Levi. The tribe of Levi, of course, was always dedicated to serving Hashem. Even in Mitzrayim, they did not have to do the work. They learned and they served Hashem. And of course, later in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash, the Levim were constantly involved with service of Hashem 24/7. That was not only their job, it was their entire life. They didn't go out into the fields, they didn't do anything except serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. Now there is another Medrash only on this particular kapitul that says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this on the day the Mishkan was dedicated. It seems to conflict with the Midrash that perhaps it was written for the people in Mitzrayim, but nonetheless, we'll see here that there are ideas about the Mishkan in the kapitul. And this kapitul used to be said whenever they expanded the boundaries of Yerushalayim. We also say this kapitul today at funerals. And in the Beis HaMikdash, this kapitul was accompanied by a lot of instruments, harps, cymbals, many different stringed instruments. It was considered a very joyous song. And it's a song dedicated to the tribe of Levi, the idea of always being in the service of Hashem. Our 16th Pesukim, and let's start with verse Aleph. Verse Aleph is a very, very famous verse. It's Yoshev B'Seser Elyayin B'Tzeil Shaka Yislonan. He who dwells in the secret areas of the Most High will be able to stay in the shadow of the Almighty. Now, previously it always said that the kapitul was written perhaps by Moshe Rabbeinu. Here there's no introductory name in the kapitul. It doesn't say Yeshir, it doesn't say anything about Moshe, David, anything. So Chazal tell us that since he was talking here about such a lofty thing and such service of Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu's humility would not let him put his name into it, in the first line, lest anyone think that he considered himself to be such a servant of Hashem, rather than just a plain old person. So therefore, there's no introductory name in the kapitul whatsoever. Now, it says that he who dwells in secret, Yoshev B'Seser Elyayin. Now, Seser, here it's translated in the covert of the Most High. I would say in the hidden places of the Most High. Seser is a secret. The hidden place is something that Seser is hidden away, like Hester upon him, Hashem's presence, like the word Hester comes from Seser. Right? It's something that's hidden away. So if you dwell in the hidden areas of Hashem, then you'll be able to dwell in the shadows of Shakai. Now, dwelling in the hidden areas of Hashem, Rashi says meaning that you don't rely on any other forms of protection. You think that the only thing you need to protect you is Hashem. Therefore, the only thing that you do to protect yourself is to daven to Hashem, and that's called dwelling in the Seser, in the hidden areas of Hashem. The Al-Sheikh has a very beautiful explanation, somewhat lengthy, but he says that the hidden areas of the Most High refer to the heart of man. That the hidden areas of Hashem, the hardest place to find Hashem, is when you look into the heart of man. Well, Rashi has a more literal explanation where it means that you're depending only on the protection of Hashem. You'll dwell in the shadow of Shakai. Now it's interesting what he says here, because Shakai, this name of Hashem, is the name of Hashem that we use whenever we're referring to Hashem dwelling in this world. When Hashem's presence is dwelling in this world, we call him Shakai. And in fact, you'll see here that it says dwelling in the shadow of the Almighty. What is the shadow called? Atzel, Betzel, and we have the famous name in Chumash, Betzalel, who made the Mishkan, who designed many of the Kalim of the Mishkan. And Betzalel is a contraction of two words, Betzal Kel, in the shadow of Hashem. In fact, he knew a lot of the things the Mishkan was going to need, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked him, are you living Betzal Kel, are you living in the shadow of Hashem? And it was called Betzalel. And living in the shadow of Shakai is referring very obliquely to the Mishkan, because, and later to the Beis Hamikdash, because the shadow of Hashem, and the name for Hashem is used when he is dwelling amongst us, and his shadow is referring to the Mishkan. Now there's another explanation that Yoshev B'Seister, sitting in secret, means the secret learning of Torah. You know, there are people that learn tremendous amounts of Torah and make sure that everybody knows it. And there are people that learn and learn and learn and learn and hardly anybody knows it. So some of Forshim say that Yoshev B'Seister sitting in the high hidden areas of Hashem is referring to people who do their learning and do their things without everybody having to know. But those people will merit to dwell with Hashem, because they don't need for everyone to know about what they're doing. They don't need to know that everyone to know about their accomplishments. In the next verse is, Omar la Hashem, I'll say to Hashem, Machsi Mitzidasi. He's my shelter, he's my fortress, Elokai Evtachbo, in whom I will trust. Now it says Elokai Evtachbo as opposed to Hashem Evtachbo. Elokim is the name we use when Hashem is dispensing strict justice. When he is judging a person strictly without any chesed, we call him Elokim. So the Pasuk is saying that even when he's Elokim, even when Hashem is judging us strictly, Evtachbo, I still trust in him. I don't just trust in him when he's doing something merciful. I trust in him when it seems like he's judging quite harshly. I still have tachbo. I still am trusting in Hashem. Then in Gimel, says Kihu Yatzicha Mifas Yakush Mitever Chavos. He'll save you from the snare, the traps, from the raging pestilence. So the word for pestilence they use here, all right, Chavos, is related to the word that we saw elsewhere, which means treachery. So this kind of pestilence and plague it's talking about are things that come on with no warning. Hashem will save you from things that come on with no warning. He'll arrange that you'll be in the right place at the right time to avoid something that you would have had no warning about and had no chance to save yourself. Even a havot, a plague of that havot that comes on suddenly, will be Hashem will save you from. With his wing he will cover you, and under his wings you'll take refuge. Sina v'socheira amito. His truth is an accompanying shield and armor. So with his wing he will cover you. So really the translation in English of this is called a pinion. And a pinion is a specific wing on a bird. And it's a wing that the bird uses to cover its young for protection, as opposed to simply for flying. And that wing is called in English a pinion. So they went ahead here and translated it as wing, but really it's called, with his pinion he will cover you. So with the same kind of wing that a bird uses to cover its young, Hashem will cover you. Lo sira mipachad laila, you'll not fear the scariness of night. Mechet ya'uf yoma, nor the arrow that flies by day. So darkness tends to be a more scary time at night. Walk out 3 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is scarier? To walk along alone at 3 o'clock in the morning is obviously scarier. However, if you're thinking of Hashem, then it won't be so scary. You won't fear it, it says. And you won't feel the arrow that flies by day. So the arrow that flies by day refers to things that come at a person with no warning. You know, you're going about your life, you're going about your daily routine, and all of a sudden, something happens with no warning. Boss comes in, you lost your job. You come home, and there's something happened at home, with no warning whatsoever. So you will not fear, just like you don't fear the middle of the night when you're thinking of Hashem. If you're thinking of Hashem, you won't fear those unexpected things as well. You won't fear those things that come at you and sort of smack you in the side of the head with no warning. Midever ba'ofel yachlo, pestilent that prowls in darkness, miketev yashu tzarayim, and destruction that ravages at noon. So it's referring to also weather here. Things that prowl in darkness, ba'ofel is referring to darkness as in cold, and tzarayim is referring to the middle of the day as in heat. You know, weather, we don't think about weather so much when we think about all the things that can happen to a person. But weather is something that can happen to a person also. Right? It's cold, it's hot. Right? It's the weather and the heat can affect a person very negatively. And if you are thinking about Hashem, you will not feel the effects of those as much. Now, and it also says here the word yashud. Now, the word yashud means shadim, or demons. Now, there's an interesting radak on this pasuk, and it's a Peledeker radak. The radak says that the men of science of his days have found no evidence of shadim. It's a very strange thing to say, because shadim, I mean, lots of things you don't see in the world. Why would men of science see or not see shadim? So Chazal tells us that Shadim are half like angels and half like people. They have several qualities that make them like angels, but they're also like people in that they eat, they drink, and they have a physical presence in the world that you can see. And the Radak is saying that even in his times, in the times of the Radak, he doesn't see Shadim anymore. So the Chachamim tell us that in order for Shadim to affect people, people have to be holding on a certain level of closeness to Hashem. In our times, we don't see shading, we don't see anything like that, because we're not close enough to Hashem to see those kind of supernatural, if you will, manifestations. We're so bound to our bodies and to this world that shading would have nothing to do with us. Even a shade would have nothing to do with us. Even a shade would have nothing to do with us. We're so far removed from Hashem. It's interesting, I remember once in yeshiva, there was a vort that was said, or my son there said from his Rebbe, and stirred up a little bit of controversy, because his Rebbe had said like this, why is it that we have so much technology in our times? You know, we have so much technology in our times they didn't have in the old days. You know, I mean, we have a computer that printed out these notes. It would have taken me a long time to write these notes. You know, in the days of Rashi, when Rashi was originally published, they called it kuntras, which means a pamphlet. Because the way they published things in those days was when you got to yeshiva, the first thing you did in yeshiva was get a pen and a paper and copy all the words of the mesechta that the yeshiva was going to learn. There's no such thing as going and buying a sefer. Now, if you were wealthy, perhaps you could pay another boy to write it for you. But you'd have to spend the first part of the Zman writing by hand the whole Masechta before you could start learning. So after you were done writing it, where did you put your notes? In the margins and all around what you just wrote. That became your pamphlet, your kuntras, that you kept with you. And you might even give it to other boys in lower levels or you might give it to your children later. Right? That became your kuntres. So when Rashi first published his thing, it was called a kuntres. Now, how long do you think it took him to write that? Wouldn't it be easier if he had a computer to type it up and print it out in 2 seconds? How come we merit to have a computer and Rashi didn't? That doesn't seem to make any sense. So explain like this. Originally, men had servants, had slaves, other people served them. Men served other men. And that's because, he said, originally man had integrity. Good, bad, medium, indifferent, people had integrity and they strived with devotion and integrity to achieve their goals in life. Whether their goals were good, bad, wrong, or different. As time went on, the level of man fell. Man had less integrity. So he didn't have servants anymore. He had animals to serve him. He still had his horses and donkeys and would plow the field. Because now by the time you come to us, we have fallen so far and we have so little integrity in our lives and in our goals and in our approach to how we deal with things that neither man nor animal will serve us. No living being will serve us, only a machine will serve us. So while it seems like we merit to have these incredible machines, the truth is that because of our low level, only a machine will serve us. A man won't serve us, even an animal won't serve us. You go to a farm today, are the donkeys plowing the fields or are these great big tractors plowing the fields? So the farmer thinks, look at me, I got this great big fancy tractor. It's, you know why? Because the donkey wouldn't serve you. So too, with shading today, and things like that, we have so fallen so far that even shading won't interact with us. Right? Even a shade wouldn't come down and affect us. Right? Shadim have some connection to Hashem. They have some connection to Hashem, and we're so far below that that even the shading won't come down and mess with us. Third digress, verse 7, Pasuk Zion, Yipu Mitzircha Eleth, will be 1,000 at your side, or Avava Miminecha, and 10,000 at your right hand, Elecha Lo Yigash, but it will not approach you. So it's not clear whether this means literally that there'll be that many people. And it could be. Some of the Mephoshim say all these thousands and tens of thousands are referring to Israel's physical enemies that will fall. Other people say it's still continuing on the idea of the Shadim and the evil things that will afflict us. But either way, the thousands of our enemies, whether it's people or whether it's something else, will fall before the people who believe and who are connected and are close and who serve Hashem. Rak be'nechasabi. You'll gaze with your eyes, v'shilamis rishayim tera, and you'll see the downfall of the wicked. So Chazal tell us, if a person is saved from their enemy, and they're saved on their own merits and their own schus, they will get to see the downfall of their enemy. However, if they're saved not because of their own merit, but for some other reason, then they will not merit to see the downfall of their enemies. So and David HaMelech talks about this in numerous kapitalach, right? That he wants the merit to see the downfall of his enemies. That sounds, why would he want to see that? Because he knows that if he's saved by Hashem because of his schus, he'll see the downfall of his enemies. If he's saved because, for example, the famous example in the Chumash is Lot. Right? Lot was saved because of the schus of Avram Avinu. So Lot did not get to see Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed. In fact, what did he say? Don't turn around and don't look at the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. You don't merit to see your enemies destroyed. If it weren't for Avraham Avinu, you wouldn't be saved. Sometimes a person can be saved because of the community he's in, or a group of people he's part of with, or because of Schus Avos. There could be a lot of reasons other than what you did right now that you could be saved by Hashem. So therefore, you know, I was thinking about, to see the downfall of your enemies is a big schus. And he's saying that you will see the downfall of your enemies with your own eyes. Ki ata Hashem machzi, for you said, the Lord is my refuge, Elyon Samta Meonacha, and the Most High you made your dwelling. Therefore, since you only had faith in Hashem and only thought about serving Hashem, you'll merit to see the downfall of your enemies. And in Yud, it is Lo Sa'una Elecha Ra, no harm will befall you, and nothing will come no plague will come to your tents. So no evil will befall you refers to being able to conquer the Yetzer Hara. That's the evil it's talking about. No evil will come against you. If you're constantly thinking about Hashem and serving Hashem, the Yetzer Hara has no opening to you. And a plague won't come to your tents. Your tent refers to your family. You'll have shalom bayis. You'll raise worthy children and worthy students. No plague will come near your personal family tent. Why? Ki malachav yitzav v'lach. Because he will command his angels, lishmorcha, to guard you, v'chol d'rachecha, in all different ways. Now all of a sudden Hashem's been taking care of us, and all of a sudden it seems like he just delegated it out to the angels. Ki malachav yitzav v'lach. He's going to tell his angels, go take care of these people. Why not do it himself? What is the purpose of a malach? The truth is, there are a lot of things that I strive to understand in Judaism, and there are a few things that I've given up on being able to understand. And malachim are one of those things. Right? The Sfarim HaKadoshim tell us that a malach is a force that Hashem sends out to do a particular job. And the reason he sends out this force is to bridge the gap between the infinite of Hashem and the finite of this world. I have no idea what that means. If you have an idea what that means, terrific. Right? But somehow or other, there's a need, or Hashem wants to be able to have a force that he sends, right, to do a job that somehow connects to our world. So it's not that Hashem is delegating it, oh, you know what, it's a malach, I'm busy with other things now. I have a meeting at 2 o'clock, but I'm going to send some malachim to take care of you guys. All right, when I'm back from the meeting, I'll check and see how it went. But rather, he's gathering his holy malachim that he uses to connect to the world, and he's using those malachim and guarding them and sending them to guard his holy servants. That's what it means, that he'll command his angels on your behalf. Al kapayim sa'unchon, and on their shoulders they'll bear you, and bentigo fa'evin raglecha, lest your foot stumble on a stone. So it's almost self-explanatory. People stumble over all kinds of things. You know, it doesn't have to literally be a stone. But if you have Hashem and his malachim watching over you, they'll kick the stone out of the way. You know, we say that when a person does a mitzvah goreris mitzvah, it brings about another mitzvah. But Hashem kicks the things out of the way. There's a lot of stumbling blocks. Whether it's physical, psychological, financial, a lot of stumbling blocks to a person doing the mitzvahs they want to do. So the more you do, the more Hashem kicks the stones out of your way. You never even realize they were there. You think, I did a simple thing today. I dropped off $5 to tzedakah. You have no idea how many stones Hashem took out of your way to get there. Perhaps your car was going to get a flat tire. Perhaps all kinds of things would have happened you have no idea about. But because of the fact that you were concentrating on the tzedakah, the malachim kicked the stones out of your way. Al shachal v'fetin tidro. You'll tread on a young lion and a cobra. Hirmos kefir v'sadi. And you'll trample the lion and the serpent. Now, a shachal is a... It says you're a young lion. Truthfully, I believe a shachal would better be translated as a mature lion. Right? One who is tough and grown and strong. And a pasin is a snake. There are no two animals that hate each other more than the lion and the snake. If you put a lion and a snake together, you are not a very good zookeeper. Right? Because they will immediately both become very angry and want to attack each other. A lion and a snake just are natural enemies. So it says you'll tread on the young lion and the snake, and you'll trample them. What does that mean? That means that even with that much evil and coming out of the world, you'll be able to walk right through it. You could walk right through the lion and the snake. The two animals, a tough, mature lion that's survived by his prowess as a predator, and the cobra snake, the snake that can kill anything with his venom and is very agile, whereas the lion is strong. They hate each other. They could be fighting at their highest potential. You could walk right through. Right? And it wouldn't affect you because you are concentrating on Hashem. Ki vi choshek, for he yearns for me. Now Hashem is talking. V'afal tehu, and I'll rescue him. Asagvehu ki yada shmi, I'll strengthen him because he knows my name. Cheshek means yearning. Yearning is even greater than love. It doesn't say because he loves Hashem. It says because he yearns for Hashem. Yearning is even greater than love. The reason is you can love more than one thing. People have more than one child and they love them all, right? In the olden days, people had more than one wife. Presumably they loved them all. You can love more than one thing. You can't yearn for more than one thing. Physically impossible, says the kid. You can only yearn for one thing. So you got to pick in life what you're going to yearn for. If you're going to yearn for money, if you're going to yearn for success, you can't yearn for anything else. You can love a lot of different things. And you could love Hashem amongst all those things, but you can only yearn for one thing. And if you yearn for me, he says, I'll rescue him and I'll fortify him because he knows my name. This is an allusion, a remez to the fact that in times of old, in ancient times, there were people who knew Hashem's 72-letter name. And the 72-letter name of Hashem enabled a person to have all kinds of mystical protection. The 72-letter name was only ever taught to select tzaddikim, and only tzaddikim who never accepted any gift or any favor from any other person in their life. They only trusted in Hashem and would accept nothing from anyone else, and therefore they merited the protection of Hashem's 72-letter name in those times. Yikra eni v'enehu, he'll call me and I'll answer him. Imo anochi v'tzar, I'm with him in his distress. Atzarehu, I'll rescue him and I'll honor him. They'll call upon me. Now, if you have a human protector, let's say a boss at work. Let's first use the old days. You were a farmer on the land, and you were in the feudal system, right? You had to go see the lord of the manor because you wanted permission to put down some extra seeds. So did you just barge right in the middle of supper time into the lord of the manor, right? Plop yourself down at the table next to him and his wife and say, listen, lord of the manor guy, I have some questions for you. Is that what you did? Of course not. First, you sent a request to the social secretary that he had to make sure that there was time, and what time can I see him, and well, what is your request about? There's a whole formality series of how you approach someone who is of a higher station than you. If you work for IBM, and you have something you want to talk to the chairman of IBM about, so do you take an airplane to IBM's corporate headquarters, walk into the chairman's office, plop yourself down next to him and say, listen, I work for this company, I want to talk to you about a few things. Or do you more likely than not spend weeks trying to get an appointment and finally you get 5 minutes and that's it? But Hashem says, well, call me and I'll answer him. We don't have any formalities with Hashem. You can barge right in whenever you want. And this is the origin of the concept we say when we're davening for someone and we're going to storm the gates of Shemayim. We're going to storm the gates of Shemayim. The chairman of IBM, you can't storm his office. Hashem says, there is nothing between you and me. Storm whenever you want. And if the chairman of IBM opened his door and said, all employees can just come in and sit down whenever they feel like it. That's what Hashem is saying. You'll call me and I'll answer you. You don't need any appointments or you don't need any fancy things. Just call me. And it doesn't matter where you are in the chain, call me. I'll be with you in your distress. And I'll honor him. Now, honor him refers to honoring a person who serves Hashem. That he'll receive honor. Orach yami masbiyehu. With length of days, I will satiate him. The arehu bishuasi, and I will show him my salvation. So with length of days means that the life of a person who is dedicated to Hashem will not be cut short in this world. Now, everybody has a certain amount of time they're destined to live. But your life could be cut short. Rahman al-Islamic. But such a thing could happen. So Hashem says, you know what? Someone who dedicates themselves to the service of Hashem, their life will not be cut short. They will live out whatever their days are meant to be, And furthermore, I will satiate it. The life will be satisfying to them. You know, people can live a long time and not be very happy about their life, not be very fulfilled in their life, and think their life was a big waste of time and not really be satisfied. Fine, they lived 120 years, but they don't feel like it was a big accomplishment in their life. So Shez Hashem, you know what? A person who serves Hashem, not only will they not leave this world before their appointed time, I'll make sure that when they do leave this world, they have a satiation and a satisfaction with their life. And I'll show him my salvation, which means he will be there to witness Techiyas HaMesim. So when exactly Techiyas HaMesim, the revival of the dead, happens, and how that whole procedure works is, of course, a little bit shrouded in mystery. But nonetheless, at a certain time, after the coming of Mashiach, or after the reign of Mashiach, the one, Hashem will revive those people that have died, and they will return with their bodies in order to see the fulfillment of the promise of Hashem. That they should see that which Hashem promised come to fulfillment. And therefore, he says, those people, I will show them my salvation. They will get to rise up, and they will get to see exactly the fulfillment of all of my promises. There's actually, I can't get it out of my head every time I say this, so I'm going to have to tell you, and that is that one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Sander Shlita, always used to say that he liked to, at every shiur, tell a little joke or humorous story, because he wanted his students to remember something, he said. You know, he used to have stories about Talmidim that would come to him 30 or 40 years later, and they'd say, oh, Rabbi, I'm learning this Masechta, that Masechta, and I remember exactly what Rabbi said. And he, Rabbi Sender, would feel so proud, and the Talmud would remember the joke. So, all that's irrelevant except for the fact that every time I see this pasuk, I think about what Rabbi Sender said, and since I can't stop smiling and laughing, I'm going to have to tell you. And it's related to the fact of why Eliyahu is going to come to let us know that it's time for Mashiach and the Techiyas HaMesim. And we say in the Gemara that those questions in Halakha that we haven't been able to decide, Eliyahu will tell us the answer when he comes. There are things in the Gemara and the Talmud that Chazal are simply unable to resolve what's the Halakha. And so we leave it as an open question. And we label it as Teku, Tishbi Yane Kushis. Eliyahu Atishbi, he'll come and he'll answer these questions. So what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? Litachias Amesim, you go ask Moshe Rabbeinu. What did Hashem tell you the Halakha was? You're going to go 1,000 years later to Eliyahu HaNavi. What happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? So he explains it with a story. There are two tailors, the pessimist and the optimist. The pessimist said, oi, business has been so bad, we're going to starve. The optimist says, yes, but look at it this way. Soon there'll be Techiyas HaMesim. All those people will get up and they'll all need suits. We're going to be rich. And the pessimist says, yeah, but all the tailors will get up too. There'll be so much competition, we're going to be poor, we're going to starve. And the optimist says, yes, all those tailors will get up, but they won't know today's styles. So that's why Eliyahu HaNavi comes. Eliyahu HaNavi never dies, and Eliyahu HaNavi will be able to answer those questions. Complete digression, I'll probably erase it from the tape, but I just wanted to share with you that so that someday when you are reading this kapitel, you'll remember what you learned in the shiur, and it'll be the joke about the two tailors, but at least you will have remembered something. I don't have to decide whether to leave that on the tape or not. Okay, this is about the tribe of Levi. The tribe of Levi always lived close to Hashem. They didn't have the same worries and burdens and responsibilities as people in other Shvatim did. They didn't have the backbreaking labor in Mitzrayim. They got to be in the Beis HaMikdash all the time, doing the Avodah, singing the Shir. They got to do all of these things. That was their job in life, was to live close to Hashem. So today, we have no tribe of Levi. Everybody has to be Levi. We don't have people that we can, like the Kapitel says, can we can put these people, say, these people are our servants of Hashem. We're going to go do our business and show up in Shul on Shabbos. And the Leviim, you know what? At least we got the Leviim taking care of all of that service to Hashem. We don't have Leviim to do that today. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We all have the responsibility to be what the Kapitel describes as the tribe of Levi. Well, you'll notice here that the Kapitel, even though we have a tradition that it's about the Shevet Levi, doesn't say anything about just Levi meeting these criteria. These are criteria that anybody could meet. We all have the responsibility today, the point of this Kapitel is, to be a Levi. You have no idea, a way of knowing what effect your actions are going to have on people. You can't leave the service of Hashem to others while you go about your daily routine. You know, there's been much written about, in the fact, the last 20 or 30 years, how many Jewish people that had been far from Jewish observance have returned to traditional observance. Colloquially, we call it the Baalei Teshuvah movement. I think these people came back to Judaism in a vacuum, or perhaps 50 years ago or 100 years ago, when a mother lit candles and davened for her children to be Talmid Chachamim, that perhaps that had an effect on the schus and the ability of these children to come back. We know a number of people that have visited our home that have been part of this Baalei Teshuvah movement. And you find out that while their parents and even their grandparents may have been far from Judaism, if you look back far enough in the family, you'll always find some pretty amazing people. Whether they were big Baalei Tzedakah, or whether they did something that provided a tremendous schus. They had no idea at the time that their actions were going to help save their family 100 years later. There's a story about a guy in Berlin. In this century, but we're in the 2000s now, so I guess in the 1900s, in the last century. And he came close to marrying a non-Jewish girl, but he didn't. His friends and his family didn't understand why. They said, listen, you know, they were Reform, and all of his other family members intermarried. Why is it that you are going to cancel and call off the wedding with this very fine girl? He said, well, you know, the Torah really says that you're not supposed to marry non-Jewish people. I said, yeah, well, the Torah says a lot of things, and we don't see you doing any of those things. Yeah, see, it's not really me, all right? It's my uncle who lives in Poland. What's your uncle in Poland? Well, you see, it's not really my uncle in Poland. It's his son. What is his son? Well, his son learns in a yeshiva, and he learns all day and all night, and, you know, every once in a while there's some communication between the various branches of the family, and I just could not bring myself to tell my cousin that learns in yeshiva all the time that I married a non-Jew. Now in Poland, that guy sitting in yeshiva, thinking about whether he should keep learning in yeshiva or not, has absolutely no idea the effect that his actions are having. The tribe of Levi went about their business of serving Hashem. Their actions had such far-flung consequences in Mitzrayim, the tribe of Levi kept everybody going for 210 years. The base of Mikdash, where Hashem's presence dwelled in the world, ran only because of the Leviim. Their actions had far-flung consequences, even though to them it seemed like they were just going about their normal duties. Today we're all Levian, and our actions all have far-flung consequences. You may not see those consequences, and you may not ever see those consequences, or ever be aware of what they are, but everybody today has a responsibility to be a Levi. In Mitzrayim, a Jew could comfort himself by saying, well, at least, even though I'm not learning, because I'm doing this back-breaking work all day, and I can barely bring myself to daven at the end of the day when I get home from this back-breaking work, thank God we have the Levim who are sitting and learning all the time. We don't have any Levim today. We only have ourselves. Everybody has to share the burden and the responsibility and the privilege of being a Levi, which really was how it was supposed to be to begin with. Because if we remember in the Chumash, who were the original priests that were going to serve Hashem? Were the firstborn of each family. It was only after we lost that privilege that Hashem designated the Levim to be the tribe that would serve him in the Mishkan, and later in the Beis HaMikdash. Originally, the Bechor was responsible. Yaakov wanted the Bechor from Esav. Why didn't Esav tell him, go see the Levim? Because the firstborn of every family was responsible for the spiritual well-being of that family. When they couldn't handle that, it was given over to the Levim. Now we have no Levim. So it's left for everybody to do. That's what a person should be thinking about, in my opinion, when you read this kapitel. It's a beautiful kapitel about the Levim and serving Hashem, and what does it have to do with us? It has to do with us that we're all supposed to be doing this. We don't have Levim, and we cannot say somebody else is serving in the Beis HaMikdash. I don't have to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. We all have to be doing that. We all have to be thinking about that all the time. There's a minhag, when you go Yom Kippur, you're forgiven for all of your various, one is forgiven for all of one's various averos, should one have averos. You can't bring a korban. You can't bring a korban chatas for a person who sins, right? Because there's no Beis HaMikdash. There are people that keep a list from every year to year to year. So when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt today, they'll know exactly what they have to bring a korban for. The halacha does not require such a thing. But the point of that custom is, what are those people thinking about? Those people are thinking, well, listen, there'll be a Beis HaMikdash, and it'll all be taken care of, and I'll show up and get my plane ticket, and I'll go and I'll live in Eretz Yisrael, and it'll be gevaldik. They're thinking, no, I'm part of the people responsible for this. Just like I have to be as much of a servant of Hashem as Levim. That's the point of this kapitel, to be thinking about when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing this about Levi and about their closeness to Hashem and the special protection they have from Hashem, because all they do 24/7 is think about Hashem. There's no reason that we can't strive for that same goal. That's the idea one should have in mind when we read this kapitel. Questions? Okay, next week we will be...